Welcome to La Liga Weekly, a name that suggests a podcast about a regular pattern of matches played in the Spanish top flight. But no, they and we just dribble out content as and when we can all make it and have no embarrassing fungal problems. Yes, we're 10 days and 1.6 rounds into the new season, and fans of Celta Vigo and Osasuna still haven't seen a goal for or against. Barcelona fans will have enjoyed their post-centre-forward world that Hansi Flick has unveiled. False nines, generous scousers and pink-haired midfielders, all very new era. Real Madrid also won thanks to a late goal from the big number nine that they brought on. It could be portrayed as modernists versus traditionalists. It wouldn't be accurate, but who cares? That's not how journalism works. This week we had the poignant sight of lonely Julian Alvarez leaving the pitch alone, booed and jeered by Atletico Madrid supporters, a man of principle desperate to break a contract that he freely entered into because he got a better offer. It's around this time of the season that we choose a third team that we'll pretend might win the league. Handily, Atleti and Villarreal played each other. Will it be one of them? Could it be Betis who won their opener? Or maybe the league leaders, Sevilla? No, it won't be Sevilla. Don't be stupid. It's weird that they've won both games. Edin Terzic needs to learn Spanish quickly. Somehow, the Athletic Club players thought he told them to pass the ball to the other team somewhere near your own penalty area. And the race for the wrinkly Pichichi is off to a good start in La Liga with 34-year-old Mariano Diaz neck and neck with 37-year-old Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. The old boys, well, different old boys are ripping it up in La Liga. Aubameyang looking, I've got to say, looking very, very fleet of foot, isn't he?
The way he does.
Yes. Goals in both of his opening games for the Deportivo player, by the way, in case you were wondering whether I'd gone back in time and just made Aubameyang.
And Mariano Diaz.
Yes, they're back. But anyway, we'll go to the top of the league, Terry, shall we? We'll go to Elche and Barcelona with a thumping scoreline. I mean, it wasn't easy at all times for them in this game, but they were devastatingly efficient towards the end of the game.
Yes, they were. I think they were helped along the way by an open, expensive Elche defence. It was an untidy performance from Barcelona, and I know that sounds really strange that they won 5-0, and I'm saying it was an untidy performance. It wasn't built around possession. It was built around the generosity of Elche defending high, a crossover between Sarabia and the new manager and players looking confused on exactly how they were trying to play. It played into the hands of Barcelona, and it was a much-changed Barcelona team. And you look at the starting 11, and I thought Elche can be pretty good. You know, they were against the best teams in La Liga last year. They were pretty good at home. And I think this could be a troublesome night for Barcelona. And it was 2-0 at half-time. They ended up running away with it 5-0. But it was a complicated first half. You know, Gavi going off injured. The makeshift back four, if you want to call it a makeshift back four, at this period of the season with Christensen playing again and Gerard Martin and then Eric Garcia and Xavi Espar playing left back. It's not a Barcelona team we're going to expect to see too often. But the quality from the bench, which helps them and it helps Real Madrid, is something that the other clubs don't have that luxury. So when you put on Anthony Gordon, you're asking him to run at a tired defence that's already 2 or 3 nil down, it certainly does help. Pedri coming in on for Gavi and stuff like that.
I should have done my research before. I'm going to check Rafinha's position. So there's no centre forward in this setup the other day. Rafinha, or is Rafinha just the centre forward? Has he abandoned the idea of a centre forward? Because even if he gets Julian Alvarez, he's not an Espy style number nine, is he? So is this what we're getting from Barca, this sort of very free ranging attacking play?
Yeah, I think it's going to be along the, if they don't get Julian Alvarez, I think it's going to be along the lines of PSG. Yeah. And what it was Rafinha and Fermin Lopez were the taking sort of a fluent positional play from those two. Fermin Lopez they both scored two goals. And there was a concern going into the game, Barcelona haven't got centre forward. How are they going to play? Are they going to score goals? Well, they scored five away from home in the first game. And it was just all about pace and intelligent play from someone like Rafinha, from Fermin Lopez. It was excellent. I mean, Danny Olmo, he can go and play there as well. So they haven't got that recognised number nine, but the team that's won the last two Champions Leagues They haven't had one. You know, it's I stick up for the traditional centre forward player because I do feel that they're being abandoned, that there's a lack of them, and youngsters don't want to be a genuine number nine anymore. They want to grow up being a you know, a player, a left-footed player on the right wing, or a right-footed player on the left wing, or a number 10. I want to play in between the lines. And we're running out of strikers. Everyone's looking for a striker. But the options are not that plentiful. So I can see it working for Barcelona, but I do think there will be a conclusion somewhere that they will get one.
Let me, hang on, can you see that? So that's Rafinha.
Yeah.
And obviously he's kicking that way. Yeah. So he goes back in his own penalty area, presumably for a corner at some point. But it's fairly false nine, isn't it? It's not right up the top, but he is central. And you can see Firmin covers a lot more ground. So he sort of is a false nine there, Rafinha, isn't he, by what he did?
Yeah, that was his position on the night. When they start from kickoff, their team shape was him in the middle.
And
the Amy on the left and Lamine Yamal on the right.
Yeah, Lamine Yamal's very right there, isn't it? Hot spot. What he got a bit of, actually, not criticism. I'm not going to overdo that, but people were a bit. People are concerned for, you know, we all want him to be brilliant. He hasn't had a rest. He went into the World Cup carrying a bit of an injury. There's a welfare issue around him, isn't there, as we sort of dribble into the new season. And he does need to get some rest at some point, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he was in the first team at 15. And now he's won a European Championship and three league titles, I believe, and a World Cup. Mm. He was underwhelming in the World Cup as well, if I have to be honest. I mean, along with Pedri was underwhelming in the World Cup. They've got to get rid of that sensation, though. They were part of a team that won the World Cup. But they probably do have this underlying issue that, you know, I should have... Pedri, for instance, I should have been starting the final, not coming on in the final. Lamine Yamal, I should have scored more goals. I wanted to be player of the tournament. But the overall effect should be we won the World Cup. It's not going to be an issue with Pedri because he's older, more experienced. But for Lamine Yamal, it does appear he weren't at his best in this game against Elche. When he was replaced, it was a hard watching him on the bench. His team were running away with an emphatic victory, but he looked miserable as anything. So I think mentally more than anything else, and this was going to happen. I mean, it's been remarkable that we haven't had a dip in form from him. And that was his first injury issue that he's had in his career. And it's remarkable. He's played for 4 years now and one injury and the first dip in form, lack of confidence. You can see he has lost a little bit of confidence, but I'm sure he'll be fine. I mean, it just needs one game, a couple of goals, one game to turn it around, and there'll be a smile back on his face. But I think you're right. People are concerned. They're not criticising him, but there is a concern that has he played too much? Has he done too much too young? Is his attitude good? You know, has it all been too easy for him so far? And this is the first sort of confidence crisis that he's suffered.
Mm-hmm. So Anthony Gordon is the other player. So he came off the bench, and as you say, you can emphasise certain elements. It was a wide open game by then, and he was able to use his pace, run from deep, etc. But he made some friends among the Barcelona supporters, particularly for the square pass that he played to Firmin when he could have finished the chance. He had as good a chance of scoring, but he squared it. And they got a tap in, so a very promising debut.
It was, and you know, but that choice he made, it couldn't have gone any better. I mean, it's actually better to do that than for him to have scored, to be honest. I mean, if he had scored, people would have said, oh, yeah, he came off the bench, the score was this, the game was open, it was set up for him, he's quick. But for him to do that, I think that won him more friends than him actually scoring the goal, with his teammates as well, but certainly with the fans, and I guess the manager. So it was a marvellous debut for him. It's interesting. I didn't know too much about him. I knew about him as a player. I knew his strengths and his attributes because I don't watch the Premier League every single game, but I'd seen enough of Newcastle and seen him, you know, at Everton in the past and knew what he was good at. But it's interesting now getting to know him I say not on a personal level, of course not, but I'm seeing him, you know, doing more media interviews now. I'm getting to know from the World Cup as well the type of person he is. And, you know, I love it that you know, we have English players playing for Real Madrid and now Barcelona. And you know, despite Rashford leaving, Anthony Gordon coming in it's created real interest. I'm intrigued, and you know, for a debut in La Liga, it couldn't have gone any better for him.
I've got a question from our friends at Talk FCB. If Barca sell Alejandro Balde, what would you say is a fair price for him in the modern market? Heard rumours of 30, 40 million euros, which seems underselling for me. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, there seems to be an issue. It appeared as if it's going to be Manchester United, but there seems to be an issue about a medical. A problem. So whether that's an attempt to drive down the price or not, I don't know. It appears that they are keen on selling someone. And, you know, he kind of feels like he's been sacrificed as the one that Hansi Flick thinks he can do without. And it's an interesting one. There's two different markets. I mean, there's a market for La Liga clubs and the rest of the Europe. That's a big price for the majority of teams in Europe on a left back. But it's not for an English Premier League club.
Yeah.
So you could add another 20 million on that, and the Premier League club probably would pay it. So that's where, but you're not going to get 25, 30 million if you sell him to, I can't see where you sell him in Spain.
Yeah.
Atletico Madrid don't need him now. Real Madrid, definitely not. Villarreal, Betis, they're not paying that money. That's it. Real Sociedad. Then further down, no one's got any money.
Yeah.
So it's a Premier League price, and they should be able to squeeze more than that from him from the Premier League clubs.
Yeah, it's such a weird market to sell a player. All comes down to whether you can get a Premier League club interested.
Well, last week we had that Joe Cole debacle laughing at Ejal. The take on it, he was tipping them to go down, get relegated. And he went, they've only spent 70 million. And I was looking, I was actually doing some homework at the time for the weekend's work. And I looked and I thought, well, that's how about nothing for the four or five clubs? Even Villarreal have only spent 1.5 million on a reserve goalkeeper. And they're in the Champions League next year. And you're laughing at Hull because they've only spent 70 million.
Yeah.
And that just shows that wide gap between a newly promoted team that are expected to be relegated, still having the money to outspend 60% of La Liga. It's incredible. It really is.
Yeah, it's more than 60%. It's almost everybody, isn't it? Except the very top clubs, isn't it? Because I'm commentating Coventry tonight. They spent 120 million.
Yeah.
And players I've never heard of. So I mean, obviously, I'm not scouting European football, but they're not picking up bargains, are they? So it's a difficult one with Balde. I mean, the fact that he doesn't play doesn't help that sale price.
No.
So if they want to get a load of money out of him, he's got to be fit and playing, hasn't he?
And do you know what's a shame? Because when he was one of those young ones that broke through, and I expected him to be there, a permanent fixture at left-back for the next 10 years. But it hasn't been that. Cancelo coming in and playing left-back didn't help him. Xabi Espart appears to be able to play both sides as well. So they don't need to sell. They don't. They keep buying and don't sell. And they're talking about Marc Casado as well being another sale. If they can get good money for him, that would help. And then it may go towards the cost of a centre forward. Or help pay for Rodri, who's came in. It was probably an unexpected purchase for Barcelona.
Yes. So, I guess so. Manchester City had a gap, didn't they? Mark Gehi played as a holding midfield player in his absence, but they're obviously happy to take the money. Right, I will. So the other Barcelona players, we'll ask you about those another time. We will move on, Terry, and we'll compare and contrast with Real Madrid. In fact, we'll let one of our patrons, Alan, do that. Patreon.com/LTEL if you want to be a patron. He says, right, not an obvious... He must have sent this during the game, 4-0. It was 5-0 for Barca, but you can already see the difference in cohesion between Barca and Madrid. Same as last year, to be honest. Madrid good in spells, don't dominate matches, fortunate to pick up a winner. Looks very similar to last year. Still no great connection between midfields and forwards. Maybe this is after watching Spain at the World Cup, but I noticed that Madrid rarely just keep the ball for periods of the game and prod a defence. It's all or nothing going forward, a bit like England at the World Cup. Very little control, give up possession too easily. Question: how does Jose gel the Madrid team while Mbappe, Vinny and Bellingham are all playing individual games? And then he sort of has a second thought. Maybe slightly harsh on Bellingham, but he drifts out of games too easily for me.
Yeah, I agree with all those points. Maybe not the Bellingham one about drifting out of the game. He did pick up an ankle injury as well when he ran around for about 7 or 8 minutes before deciding to take him off. You see him twist his ankle. I thought he was brilliant the other night. I mean, he's unstoppable sometimes when he's in possession of the ball in a crowded area in midfield and he's weaving his way through with great skill, great control, great dribbling ability, upper body strength to hold people off. The performance of Real Madrid, I mean, we can't expect a massive change in one game. And we have this issue with players and missing players who have played in the World Cup and all that stuff. And for Jose to get across his methods and ideas in probably a week or so with some of them, a couple of weeks maybe, it would have been unrealistic to expect that to see that against Espanyol. Do I expect to see any different as we go along? I don't. I think it's going to be the same. And this isn't just Jose's Real Madrid. This goes back 30 years. Real Madrid have always been like that. It's all about style quality. It's all about individuals, and it serves them well. And it is a different style of play to Barcelona. I mean, we had the same questions about Zidane and Ancelotti and in their different periods of managing Real Madrid. That's what they are, and it's going to be difficult. I think Jose made a good point that he feels reluctantly he had to play Fede Valverde as a holding midfielder. And I thought that, watching the game, I thought it was a waste of Fede Valverde. He's sitting there, he's keeping it nice and tidy, and playing alongside Bernardo Silva. And Jose said if Tchouaméni's fit, he will probably be the holding midfielder, which will allow Fede Valverde to play, express himself more, to get about the pitch more, to be in more important positions during the game. So that might be the slight change. But when you got, you know, probably it's going to be Diamandi, it was out of good at the weekend, it's probably going to be Mbappe down the middle, it's going to be Vinicius on the left. You're sort of hamstrung by what you can do with those players, other than try to get some sort of framework of a defensive setup when you're out of possession. But you know what you're going to get when you get on the ball. Vinny was poor the other night, and Mbappe was good, contributed to the game. I thought Bellingham was excellent. The right side is still, you know, whether it's Arda Güler or Yann Diamandi, remains to be seen how successful that can be. Defensively, they looked pretty solid. And it was, again, I wouldn't say they were fortunate to win, but the circumstances, bringing on the youngster, Carlos Espi, and getting the winner, they were fortunate to get it so late in the game and take all 3 points. But there was a period in the game, first 20, 25 minutes, I was working on the game and I said they should have been 2 or 3 nil up and they might pay for that. And they did. They didn't finish off. They were so dominant. We might have been talking about conversation might have been different if they'd carried on in that frame of mind that they had for the first 20, 25 minutes, or Espanyol didn't change their attitude. Espanyol played like, had the brakes on. They didn't get up the pitch. They didn't have an out ball, even though they had two forwards up there. It was a polite performance from Espanyol. And then we had a brief drinks break and the attitude changed. And then they get the equaliser before half time. And it was completely a different game then. But it doesn't matter whether you're Real Madrid or everyone else. If you're on top and as dominant as they were for 20, 25 minutes and you've only got one goal lead, they could have finished that game off. We could have been talking about a 5-0 here, like Barcelona. If they got their second goal, they would have run away with that game completely. Calatrava gets the equaliser. And in the second half, Espanyol had something to get their teeth stuck into. So, yeah, I didn't expect to see too much difference in one game. Mm. Now, it remains to be seen whether we do as we progress.
You're a big fan of Carlos Espi. Terry, you said that before he went there and they paid, what's his clause, 25 million euros? It seems an obvious bit of business to do, doesn't it? He's not going to be front line. He's not going to be there in front of Mbappe. But It is a he's a good enough player, isn't he, to be playing a reasonable amount of football for Real Madrid.
Yeah, he got 11 goals in 13 games the second half of last season. He kept Llorente up. You see Llorente now, they're missing him. And to go to Real Madrid, it's not easy when he's only just turned 21 in the last couple of weeks. To go to Real Madrid from Levante, mixing with the superstars, waiting for them to drift back from the World Cup. But he is a godsend to Real Madrid and to Spain. I mean, if he can continue this form that we're seeing and the improvement, and he will get better now playing with better players at Real Madrid. I have no doubt about that. Training on a daily basis will be at a different level to training with his teammates at Levante. 25 million euros. So what we're talking about, £22 million, something like that. It's ridiculous. I would have paid it within a week of the season ending. But it appears that with teams like Hull and Ipswich and one or two others that were interested, someone could have pinched him. You know, you're getting all the big clubs in the Premier League are all looking at that classic profile. 6 foot plus, striker, quick, good in the air, holds the ball up, scores a goal. I'm amazed that Real Madrid were able to do the deal only after getting the bid for Gonzalo Garcia. And then they thought, well, yeah, we'll take that 40 million and we'll go and spend it on 25 of it on Carlos Cespedes. And I'm not saying who's better and who's out the two, but his goal scoring record was better than Gonzalo Garcia's. My worry then was, will he ever get an opportunity at Real Madrid? But coming off the bench and scoring on your debut is going to ensure. They're calling him Junior Hosselu. So he is a plan B. But as my point, Jose's big enough and bold enough that if he keeps coming on and scoring or affecting games, Jose will drop one of the front three. He'll find a place for him. And at the weekend, I'd have to say the performance of Vinicius was awful. His stats, I mean, I'm not massive on stats, but my eye test told me he was poor. His stats were terrible. And there was a time during the game when Espy was coming on, I was thinking he's probably going to put Mbappe left and put Espy up front. But Vinny stayed on, and they got the win. Everything's cool because they win and get 3 points. No dropping the points early in the season away from home against Espanyol. But no, I don't think Espy is, time being, he's going to be on the bench. But my point is, if he's coming on and scoring goals and affecting games on a regular basis, Jose won't be afraid to make a change.
We're a whole 1.6 games into the season, Terry. We haven't discussed Real Madrid and referees so far, but you right. It's a positive and a negative mixed up together. If the point that you want to make isn't about we, you and I have long said with Spanish football, many qualities. One of the downsides, though, is the player's very good at stopping the game, and so you don't get a lot of ball in play time. Obviously, I mean, this is all new FIFA stuff or IFAB stuff, isn't it? It's international, you know, stuff about speeding the game up. Downsides to that when you're in a very hot country, of course, because part of the reason that Spanish football has grown like it has grown, you react to your environment, don't you? So there are downsides to that, but they've been trying to speed the game up, trying not to give soft fouls, but you thought this was the only game that didn't fall into that trend.
And one team in particular benefited. And to the extent Manolo Gonzalez, now I know it's sour grapes, he lost the game and late on, and that will hurt. But he confessed after the game, he had to take the players off that were booked because he said, I never trust a referee against Real Madrid. It was a bit harsh to say that on the back of a defeat. But there were more free kicks in this game given in terms of those little ones where you're thinking, oh, come on, that's not a foul. But it was both ways. So it wasn't just purely for Real Madrid, but they did benefit more from it. And then when you see the other games, the players are quickly realising when they crash to the ground and flop to the floor and it's not given. And there's also the element of, I can't stay down injured because I've got to go off.
The whole minute off the pitch thing, it
So
really has changed the game.
there's still that grey area where players are going down. I think Alex Baena did it. And it was on the end of a dodgy challenge as well. But it was just about, I think the referee played advantage and he carried on. Baena rolled around on the floor. He was trying to get a yellow card for his opponent. And then kind of 20 seconds in thought, oh no, I better get up. I was I'm going to have to go off for a minute. So that's helping as that as well. But I have seen in most of the games now, and it's better. You know, they're not fouls, they're not free kicks, and it's not, it's, they're not good enough reasons to keep breaking the game up just because someone's fell on the floor, flopped on the floor. So and this goes back, it's not just Real Madrid, this goes back to Busquets. Busquets did it all the time. Busquets used to put his back into a player when he was under pressure. There's a slight touch, he went down, the referee always gave fouls. So it's not a recent thing in La Liga, but I think it's something that has been talked about purely from in the Spanish league. Other leagues are doing their own thing and they probably don't need to address this as much as La Liga. But I think it was something that was desperate to happen. But this was the only game I worked on at the weekend and watched where half a dozen of those free kicks were given. And you're thinking, really? Is that a foul? You've stopped the game. And I don't think there's been a few cases now where we have the time restraints on the goalkeeper, time on the throw-ins, the substitutions. Free kicks from deep, they take 30 seconds still. Mm-hmm. That's the grey area that needs shutting down.
Oh,
there were a couple at the weekend, the halfway line, they're sending people forward and they're stopping. And I'm looking at the clock and I'm thinking, it's 25, 30 seconds. The player's been over the ball.
Yeah.
And he's not done it. He's not taking it.
I've got a... I do, again, I've always advocated speeding the game up, so I'm aware that I'm slightly arguing against my old point. There are times at which, with the whole throw-ins have got to be taken, there are times at which you do, it's not unreasonable sometimes to take 15, 20 over a throw-in, as in you might want some players to get into a position. Not every throw-in has to be a quick throw-in, I think. I think it's not unreasonable. And so, like you say, a free kick from deep, if you want your centre-backs to go forward, I think it's reasonable to give them, like, we're going up, you know, get up there. My main one that I think takes too long is the attacking free kick, where it's going to be a shot on goal.
Yeah, exactly.
No one ever scores, hardly ever gets scored, these free kicks.
Yeah.
And it's the ref that does it. The whole pacing out the wall, and then he sprays his thing, and then he goes back and they've moved and half an inch, and so he goes back, and then, oh, hang on, that fella over there is only 7 metres away, and oh, my goodness.
And the attackers are too close to the wall. That's another one.
Yeah.
It does, those sort of things.
The whole thing takes a minute to take a free, and then they hit the wall or bloke blows it over the bar almost always. Yeah. Anyway, so that's the bit of the game I... Referees wasting time is the bit I would speed up. Let's plough on, Terry. So I was saying that we try and convince ourselves that it's a three horse race. Is it a three horse race? We've had a couple of looks of Atleti now. We didn't discuss. I lose track of when we speak to each other now. That was how the season started. They beat Malaga with a couple of really good goals, didn't they? But it needed a couple of good goals. And then Mark Pubi in fact, both Atleti's goals were good. And then both Villarreal goals in the 2-2 draw were penalties. Red card for Le Normand. So how do we, what's your verdict so far on Atleti?
Well, out of these two teams, I was more impressed with Villarreal.
Right.
There's a difference between Nico Perez and Villarreal. So although I said Jose hasn't had a chance to do it yet, I did see a difference from Villarreal. Now, Villarreal under Marcelino, I'm not being critical at all of Marcelino. What he did at Villarreal was astonishing. Joined when they were in a relegation battle when they've been in regular players in Europe and Champions League last season and again this season. But he was quite content when the build-up play was quite slow. And when they lost the ball, they weren't a team that tried to win it back quick. They dropped off, made it hard for teams to play against. So at times, I was kind of frustrated with Villarreal, not being aware that that was the problem, but speed the game up, play at a higher tempo. You got the players. And I found at the weekend that they were, when they lost the ball, they were working quicker to win it back higher up the pitch. And then they were winning the ball back again. So I was really impressed by Villarreal. When you talk about, is it a three-team race? I was looking, during the game I was commentating on, the points difference they've got to make up, and it's too much. I know it's a different season. They were 25 points away from the, top two. So that's a massive gap to close. But I was really impressed with them. Now, for Atleti, it's a mess. Not of their own doing, partly of their own doing. But the players coming back from the World Cup, that issue, Christian Romero signed, he's not on the bench. They've now got, I think they used four centre-halves at the weekend, and Romero still wasn't one of them. So they've ended up being top-heavy with... So Jimenez come on, you have Pubil, Hansko, Lenormand all playing in the game, and you've got Christian Romero. So you've got five top-class centre-backs. One of them's going to have to go, probably Lenormand, or probably Jimenez, but you won't get much money for him now. So Lenormand is an obvious one. He's suspended now, of course, but I can't see how you can keep five. Simeone is making the point that I haven't got a striker. Sorloth's injured. Griezmann's left the club. And we have this debacle with Julian Alvarez. I felt for him, but I understand the Atleti fans. I think the situation is now down to the club to resolve. You know, players do want to leave at times. They want to go and play for a different club for all sorts of reasons. The deal has to be right for Atleti. He has to understand that. They can't just give him away now to anyone, to Barcelona or wherever. But that noise when his name was read out, and you could hear, because he was so far down the list, they named the 11, they named the subs, it's going in numerical order, and everyone's counting to get to number 19. It was awful. I felt for him. You know, I don't know what's going on in the background. They're saying that they made him, you know, promises, and they're denying it, that he could leave and finish the season last year, and, you know, don't talk about it in the World Cup and stuff like that. But maybe Barcelona haven't offered the deal that suits Atleti. It's got to be the right deal.
I've got a limited... I've got a cap on my sympathy for him because he's under contract. He doesn't have to do this. And if you know anything about modern football and about La Liga finances, it's not an easy deal to do because he costs so much money, he's paid so much money. And so Barcelona haven't got a spare. They can't just keep upping the bid. They can't just keep saying, oh, we'll make it 120, 140. You know, they did that in the past for Coutinho. It bankrupted them. So they can't do that. Atleti can't give a guy away to a direct rival. You know, we're at this stage of the season, the direct rivals for the title. I want to play for Barcelona. I'd love to play for Barcelona. it's a somewhat, kind of say, slightly childish desire, isn't it? To just think, well, yeah, I'm sorry, but you've got a job and you've got a contract.
Yeah, and it's essentially, I mean, I'm not sure what else he's done wrong other than ask for the transfer. He looks miserable. He looks glum. He looks depressed. But he hasn't come out and actually said, I'm not going to play. I'm not going to train. He's doing all that stuff. I don't know what it must feel like when 60,000 people turn on you. And let's be honest, Atleti don't boo their players. They're Real Madrid fans, it's pantomime season. They've always booed some of them. You can see it. It's not in jest, but they're laughing while they're doing it. It's a kind of a sport at the Bernabeu. Atleti don't do that. So for 60,000 to turn on him in the way that they did, it was unanimous, wasn't it? They don't want him at the club. So that's got to be taken into consideration now. What else has to be taken into consideration is Simeone needs the money to replace him. Griezmann's gone. Sorloth's injured. Julian Alves, if he's there for the first 6 months of the season, this is all going to kick off again in January. It needs to be resolved. I don't know how, though. Arsenal were lurking in the shadows. He can say no to that.
Arsenal haven't made a bid, so this the sort of the off ramp, as they call it, isn't yet operational. But if he was to say, if the champions of England and a Champions League club come in and offer you a load of money to go and play for them, and you still say no, then my sympathy levels would dip again. You can't. You sign a contract with a club. It does not give you free rein to say, not only do I want to leave, but I want to leave specifically for that club, who's your direct rival and nobody else.
That's the problem. That is the problem. Does he want to go to Arsenal? I don't know. There's talk of Gyökeres is going the other way. That kind of suit Atleti as well, and some money.
I mean, those deals never. Well, they sometimes they might happen in the future. Now they've realised it's a way around the financial restrictions to do swap deals.
What you mean? Clubs try and find ways around the
so they don't have to pay sell-on clauses and stuff. Oh, yeah, so he's gone there for five million, Julian Alvarez.
You
say
we've got two players here. You can have.
Yes.
One of them's got sell-on clause, so we'll price him down quite cheap. But you got to pay like 80 million for Savinho.
Yeah. Yes, football and the clubs would never do anything dodgy like that. So, yes, that's our official position.
But where do we go with it? I mean,
I don't know.
I don't know. We're running out of time. Yeah, we've got a week.
And you get booed by 60,000 people and you trudge off the pitch on your own.
And we have to clear that up. He didn't do that himself. And I don't think that was the wisest choice by the club. The bit at the end, you know, when the players go and greet the singing supporters behind the goal. Yeah. He was going. He was lingering at the back, which is understandable. But he was going. And one bloke in a suit, maybe there was two, I think, passed the message on, ushered him off the pitch. That was the worst thing that they could have done.
Because his
teammates turned on him. Or Blake criticised him for that after the game, without knowing the circumstances. So when they asked Oblake straight away on the pitch, what do you think about Julian Alvarez walking off? He said, no, we're all together. We've got to be together. It wasn't a stinging criticism, but you could tell he didn't know that the guy in the suit had pulled him away. That was a silly choice. He could have just lingered around the back, but making him walk off on his own. And the guy in the suit buggered off and left him. So if the guy in the suit had walked off with him, that would have been like we're doing it, the club's doing it. But he took a few steps, ushered him away, and then left him.
And he has to walk off on his own.
The image you get then is Alvarez strolling down the tunnel, gets someone for a shirt at him, and it was awful. So. My advice on Atleti don't need Simeone, but I think Simeone is leading towards it. I don't want a player here, don't want a beer, and I want the money to go out and buy two strikers.
Yeah.
It's clear.
But it's clear from that direction, and Barcelona then reduce their bid, don't they? The more pressure comes on Atleti to sell, the less Barcelona want to play.
But then Atleti do have to hold their ground and they have to say to be up transparent. Say to everybody, we've had this offer and he don't want to go with it. We're not accepting the offer from Barcelona. This is the offer from Barcelona. Allegedly, it's paid over 6 years. It's whatever it is. I don't know how true that was. But if that's the case, say, we're not selling him to Barcelona. They want to pay 90 million over 6 years. That's not happening. So tell Julian Alvarez, forget that. You're not going there unless they cough up. This is Arsenal, for instance. You're turning that down. Now you bear the consequences. You play, you do your job properly. The supporters know you don't want to be here. The supporters know you don't want to go anywhere but Barcelona. And they've got to accept it. I think that's possible that happens.
Yeah. Or the other one I'm going to chuck in is a loan deal somewhere, some big club that doesn't have the money to pay 100 million, whatever, but we'll have him for a season, pay his wages for a season. Like the whole thing. Calm down for a bit.
Yeah.
So, I don't know,
But does that help Atleti? They won't have the cash to go and spend.
Yeah,
They'll have to go and get a loan and stuff. And it doesn't suit them. It's a shame. I mean, ultimately, I'm not sure he's worth the money.
Well, that's the thing. Barcelona winning 5-0 with Rafinha playing as a false nine and Fermin Lopez and Gordon coming off the bench and everything else. You think, well, do they need to break the bank?
It's an interesting... There's even little talks of Harry Kane. He's in the last year of his contract. He'd probably be cheaper than Julian Alvarez if they could get him. He hasn't signed the deal at Bayern. There's talk about Barcelona in the background. Julian Alvarez is... I get it. I've been through two or three transfers, and it can be agonising sometimes waiting for it all to everything to fit in place, and a couple of occasions I've asked for a transfer and stuff like that, and you have to go through. My situation was different because there wasn't a deadline, which is this has got a deadline, hasn't it? Arsenal transfer. I might have, I can't remember properly. I might have been there 3 months on the transfer list until I went or whatever, and or didn't go in some cases. But it was never that deadline. It's got to be done by next week, which is what we're talking about now. We're hearing it now.
Yes.
Whereas otherwise, you then can't go.
Yes. Strengthening my one-man campaign to abolish the transfer deadline. That's, the more I think about it...
I know, right? I'm backing you. I totally back you.
Yeah, the more you think about it, the more regulations they put in, that bit is just an anachronism. Don't need it anymore, out of time. Anyway, we need to talk about the potential champions, Terry. Sevilla have won both games, and utterly convincingly, they've dominated both games. No mistakes by Athletic Club. I mean, Edin Terzic... I watched his press conference. It's all in English. It's like, but then Hansi Flick has won the title.
That's Andy, isn't it?
Flick has won the title every season he's been in Spain. So there's obviously a bit of a language gap in that he doesn't have the Spanish. He obviously won't speak any Basque, but his English. I'm baffled by how good people. Gonzalo Garcia, when he signed for Fulham. I know Anthony Gordon spoke perfect Spanish or very good Spanish. Gonzalo Garcia, like he'd lived in England all his life. Anyway, so Edin Terzic does all his stuff in English. He was putting a brave face on it, but dear me, this was catastrophic for Athletic Club, wasn't it?
It was incredible. I mean, the hopes were high. They've got three World Cup winners in their squad. It had gone stale under Valverde. Despite all the great things he's achieved, it was the right time for him and the club to change things up. But it couldn't have gone anywhere. And I was considering that Unai Simon conceded one goal in the World Cup. He's conceded three against Sevilla in this one match. And there was mistakes made by him as well.
The first one was him, wasn't it?
How did Spain get away with him in goal? But then you look at the stats, didn't he have like 8 saves to make in a whole tournament? It was a ridiculous number of saves, but his possession football was tidier. It wasn't at the weekend. He was involved in the sending off, wasn't he? There was hesitant play by him. I think a defender expected him to come out and he didn't, and then Yuri Pachichi is left in, you know, with trying to rectify the situation.
And that's 10 minutes into the game, isn't it? Then he has a howler 15 minutes in for the first goal for Sevilla.
He has a heavy touch. They were just untidy and they were sloppy, weren't they, at the Athletic Club at the back? And Robert Ewart was putting him under pressure. And that was... Actually, it's a given. If you think that Unai Simon he's not bad on the ball, but he can have moments during a season where he'll make those mistakes. And that's quite an obvious conclusion to make if you're Luis Garcia Plaza. Robbie, you've got an enthusiastic, quick, dynamic centre forward. Go and close the goalie down. Put the defence under pressure. They're not the best when they're under pressure in that situation. And it worked. The first goal was it's ended up a tapping for us. So it was an absolute debacle. The sending off and the goal. It was, you thought that, all right, it's going to be tough for them now, but they're at home. Sevilla, not the best team in La Liga. They still have a chance. And Luis Garcia Plaza was fantastic what he did in the second half. At half-time, made 3 changes, all attacking, and they went for the second and third goal, and they got them.
Yeah, so, second goal was really good, wasn't it?
Aduke, the build-up, but that was really good. And Isaac Romero, that was a mistake as well by Athletic Club. Mm-hmm. Areso, 2-0 down to 10 men, tries a back heel just on the edge of his own penalty area. Straight to a severe place, he shoves it into Isaac Romero and he finishes it off in style. So, and before the game, Terzic was saying we've had 7 weeks preparation. That's not strictly true because some of the players haven't been there. But it's how that can just go so wrong through no fault of his in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 10 minutes. And you think it's best just to write that off. Show that they don't even need to see the clips of what they've done. Write it off. Look to the next game and a full start to the season for Athletic Club.
Yeah.
But the same problems are still there. Hmm. They're not. Iñaki Williams didn't. look Tilly good in this one? Can they get Nico fit on a regular basis? Can Sanchez play on a regular basis and score more goals? It was an untidy performance.
Yeah. Betis have played a game. They beat Real Sociedad 1-0. Again, two teams who probably occupy in the same kind of space, as in a good season is Champions League, a bad season and they could drift off into mid-table, which we've seen them both do. Riquelme wins it with a volley. Early signs, Terry?
Both teams were good. This, I think, in fairness, it should have been a draw. Oriuskusen had a couple of chances. It was a quality goal, but it was a high quality game. Just lacked that sharpness in front of the goal. I actually was going to make a prediction that Oriuskusen might be a surprise player this year, and he missed a couple of chances. But he's looked good in pre-season. He looked good at the back end of last season. He is what Real Sociedad desperate for. It frees up Oyarzabal from being that centre forward playing with his back to goal. So, both teams looking in good shape, to be honest.
Yes. Now, to be where I sent through some predictions. We didn't ask for them because it's so hard to make the predictions. Everyone sort of leaves them till September, which is understandable because you don't know how strong the teams are going to be until their transfer business is done. But Tapia's gone in. He's dived in. Barca top. He's got Real Madrid second. Atletico third. Villarreal fourth. Betis, Athletic Club. I wonder. we'll write off the shambles of the other day. Real Sociedad seven. Celta Vigo eight. It's hard to know anything about Celta Vigo. Obviously, the first game was ridiculously called off, wasn't it, because of the pitch. Osasuna ninth again. We haven't seen any evidence. The one he admits he's gone a bit crazy on. He's got Racing 10th, Valencia, Alaves, Getafe, Sevilla in 14th, Rayo Vallecano 15th, Espanyol 16th. I thought they were all right. Depor and then relegation. So Elche, Levante, Malaga. So obviously he's a man who knows his Spanish football.
Yeah.
So what evidence have we seen in the early talk? I'll give you the scores. Valencia 0, Celta Vigo 0. I have not watched it.
I was working on the game straight after. So I was working on the one before, the one straight after. So I ate quickly before doing the
game. You know what I did? I looked at the XG and I thought, I can't be bothered. I can watch it. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everybody. Rayo Vallecano 1, Alaves 1. Mariano Diaz benefits from a mistake at the end. What else have we got? Depor then have drawn two games, 1-1, Aubameyang. Getafe 1, Racing 0, and Osasuna 0, Levante 0.
We should mention Rayo, the Rayo game. It's becoming a bigger story now, Rayo.
Yeah.
The players, this was played at Leganés. Yes. 4,000 people there.
Yeah, yeah.
And even Sergio Camello scored a really good goal, came out after the game and there's like anarchy from everybody against the owner of the club.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Pathé Cisse now is allegedly going on strike because clubs want to buy him and the club won't sell him. So it's a mini version of Julian Alvarez. But I get why a player would want to leave Rayo.
Yeah.
Crap training ground. You haven't got a stadium to play in. They haven't signed anyone. Why would you want to stick around? It's unless you would have to. And if other clubs want you, who have got a training ground and a stadium to play in, why wouldn't you want to leave? So it's a big talking point in Spain, the demise of Rayo because of one person. Mm. And this was 4,000 for the first game against Alaves, arrives on a Thursday night, not an ideal kickoff. That's going to get worse. We're going to be seeing La Liga games in that stadium. If they continue, no one even knows where the next home game is.
Mm.
That was a one-off. It could be Burgos, which is 2 hours away. So we are on the verge of seeing a catastrophe for La Liga, I think, where we literally, it's going to look like a COVID match.
Mm. Yeah.
Because no one's going to be there. If they play one of the teams that don't have travelling support, that we could be watching a stadium, a game that it's bad enough with 4,000 in. It say it goes down to 1,500, 2,000. Won the top league in Europe. That can't happen. So that's a big story. And Kamara coming out, he was pretty blunt after the game. There is a massive problem at Rio. I mean, La Liga have got to put some sanctions in to the guy that, is it Martin Presser, who's running it down. But then you're punishing the players.
And the fans, yeah.
And the fans. So yeah. it's, but they can't just be this silence that this decrepit stadium where you can catch Legionnaire's disease and there's been silence. It needs resolving. And it hasn't. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, are they going to be relegation candidates? Probably, because they might not play a home game this season.
Yeah. Yeah, under their last two coaches, they've punched above their weight, haven't they? They've been highly regarded, haven't they? The work that Iraola and Inigo Perez have done. So there's a lot of pressure now on a new coach, and there's not, we don't know. I don't know much about him and his background or what he intends to do, but I mean, good luck, you know. Like, yes, there you go. You can't sign any players, and you haven't got a training ground.
The tyres out,
and you haven't got a stadium.
The goalkeeper's out injured for long. Yeah, goalkeeper's out injured long term as well now.
Yeah,
the tyre, he's picked up a surgery on his knee, so it's going to be desperate. So then you're looking around the Valencia, Celta, not too much to take, and then their first games. Decent point for Celta. Disappointing result for Valencia at home. Getafe, Racing,
Enesuna. I was going to ask you about him. Yeah. Sorry, it saves a penalty that wins, that keeps the win. It's good to see Enesuna back. I mean, I think he was a terrific player. He hasn't lost it. He's just he's older and he's had two serious knee ligament injuries. So I've fingers crossed that he's fully fit.
Oh, he is. I mean, his best form of his career has been at Getafe. So going back, it's like a comfort blanket. He's gone back home. Stadium looks better, doesn't it? The proper stands behind the goals. So that's been a quick improvement from the end of last season. The Colosseum's, it was a rip-roaring atmosphere, actually. And Racing, I think they've shown enough to suggest that they're going to have a chance of staying up. Probably should have got something in this game. You said the missed penalty was quite a fortunate decision that went their way. But Getafe do what Getafe do. And Enesuna was a good addition, really good addition to the squad.
Yes. And Aubameyang has scored in both of Depor's draws. It'll be interesting to see him. I mean, he's 37, but like I say, he still looks pretty fleet of foot, doesn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he took his goal really well. It was an easy touch around the goalkeeper, but the run off the ball. And there was other opportunities. He led the line well. He still looks really quick. His goal the week before was excellent. Chupa scores the penalty. It was just about a penalty, I think, just about. And they nearly won it when Chupa, do you see the back pass across your own 6-yard box?
It's extraordinary. It's like a cross into his own penalty area to an unmarked opponent.
And Graham Hunter said he wasn't ready. But probably wasn't expecting the centre back. Was it Diego Villares? Came on as a sub, and he's literally, we see it, goalkeeper, two centre backs have split wide, and he's tried to wrap his foot around it. Penalty spot. It turned into the perfect cross for an unmarked player who hits the crossbar. So, Malaga, I think all three of the newly promoted teams will have a chance. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the league. Who hasn't got points? It's not worth even talking about. Real Sociedad played one game, lost to Betis. They haven't got any points. There's not many teams without points. So, Racing, they've got a point, haven't they?
Real Sociedad Athletic Club are the only one, but they've only played a game. So, that's fair enough. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm looking at the table. I'm not even going to say what's in the table because we haven't even played two rounds of games, let alone get to that first international break. We'll have a chat about the table after that international break. Because there are games now coming up the next few days, aren't there? Next few nights that will catch up. I think that will catch us up. Yes, and then we're into the next one as well. So we will get there eventually. We'll know who's top of the league one day.
I'm out on Thursday for the Osasuna Celta Osasuna game, and then I've got a Friday night match. I've got a Saturday match and a Sunday match, and come back Monday. So. It's been a chaotic start for everybody.
Yes, yes. And our chaotic start to the season will continue with another podcast at some point with some teams who will have played some football in some stadiums somewhere, and that's a guarantee. So we'll see you next time we get together, and enjoy whatever La Liga can serve up between now and then. We'll see you then. Bye bye.